Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, David Byrd. This week, we sail along with some girls from South Carolina on a confidence-building voyage.
You know, it's a lot to spend a week on a boat after, you know, I have absolutely no sailing experience. I've never done anything like this before.
Then we'll visit one of the most remote observatories in the United States.
The measurements show that the carbon dioxide, for example, is increasing in the atmosphere. We know the physics of that. We know what that means for the atmosphere.
And ahead of Halloween, we make a trip to a pumpkin patch on this week's American Cafe. You've probably seen them online or maybe in a magazine, those articles that are top 10 ways to build your confidence. Some of the suggestions include things like get things done, be fearless, monitor your progress, or exercise. Well, as VOA's Isha Sarai tells us, a group of young women from Charleston, South Carolina, did all of those things and more on board a sailing ship in the Atlantic Ocean.
Many of these teenage girls have never set foot on a boat, but they are embarking on a week-long voyage as part of a program to take them out of their comfort zone and help boost their confidence.
The offshore leadership program really focuses on leadership skills, and of course it is about, you know, being on the boat and on the water and stuff, but it's really about teaching girls kind of about like finding themselves and bringing out their confidence.
It's obviously going to be a very difficult trip. It's, you know, it's a lot to spend a week on a boat after, you know, I have absolutely no sailing experience. I've never done anything like this before.
Seasickness and homesickness are among the challenges.
I've got this nice top bunk, and then Celia has this really nice bottom bunk. Yeah, my biggest fear is just kind of being away from home so far away out in the middle of, you know, 20 miles offshore. I miss my dog, my family, but I'm really excited to get to know everyone.
The 17 students from the independent girls' school, Ashley Hall, sailed from Norfolk, Virginia to their hometown of Charleston, South Carolina in 1 week. During the trip, they pushed themselves and each other to brave cold weather and hard labor, often on little sleep.
You're waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning and having to put on your gear and sit out in the cold. We didn't have our phones, like there was no outside connection whatsoever.
They were sort of apprehensive at the beginning, and they realized that they could do it, and they worked around the clock, did an outstanding job.
I'm outie. You love me hanging.
Honestly, sometimes the hardest part was being able to like visualize that we would actually be here in Charleston. For so much of it, we were literally just in the ocean, and the ocean looks the same a lot of the places where you are. Honestly, I learned, I think, besides all the terminology, just how to be confident in things that I do outside of my comfort zone. And really knowing that once I commit myself to embracing everything that it had to offer, I knew that that was how I was going to get the most out of this experience.
But until their next time out to sea, these girls are just happy to be home. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Charleston, South Carolina.
To see video of the girls' trip, check out our website, voanews.com. On the northern tip of the state of Alaska, on the edge of the Beaufort Sea, is the town of Barrow, or Utqiagvik. That's where the Barrow Observatory is staffed year-round by two researchers who measure and track changes in air quality and weather. Natasha Mozgovaya traveled to Barrow to see what life is like in one of the coldest and snowiest places in the world.
Ryan Thomas is station chief at the northernmost scientific outpost in the United States, the Barrow Observatory. Since 2015, he and a colleague have trudged through ice and snow, taking measurements of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere to track minute changes in Earth's climate. The town's isolation with wind that has bypassed large cities allows them to collect quality air samples.
Here we're monitoring for ozone-depleting gases. These are compounds that were prohibited by the Montreal Protocol, which was signed in the early 90s, and all the parties to the Montreal Protocol have agreed not to use these substances anymore.
Recently, Brian also started monitoring the amount of methane in soil. It has been released from the ground as rising temperatures melt Alaska's permafrost.
Methane is a greenhouse gas, so there's concern that that might contribute to the warming of the Earth.
Thomas's work is unaffected by climate change policies in the White House, although the results might be interpreted differently than in the past.
My job here is to take the measurements like we've been doing for 40 years. The measurements show that the carbon dioxide, for example, is increasing in the atmosphere. We know the physics of that. We know what that means for the atmosphere and what we do about it and who does what about it and when is a policy decision and a politics decision that I don't have a direct influence on.
Thomas came here in 2007 from his hometown of Sacramento, California. But this is home to his four-year-old son, Ellis, who was born here and goes to immersive kindergarten where he learns the local native language, Inupiaq.
It excites me that he is interested in doing that, and my older daughters as well are interested in the culture.
The cold climate may not be conducive to meeting people, but Thomas says it hasn't stopped his family from making friends. It's the friendly polar bears he worries about.
So one day when we were coming out, we always look out before we come, and there was a white mound underneath the platform of the satellite antenna. The wildlife agent came, and he pulled up on his ATV, on his four-wheeler, and he said, "I watched the bear come over here." And the bear was coming from the lagoon. It was coming from the ocean, and it had probably been on land for a few hours, and it wanted a place to rest.
Just another part of life for those who live and work in the northernmost community in the United States, at the very edge of the Arctic Ocean. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Utqiagvik, Barrow, Alaska.
You can get a look at the observatory and some of those friendly polar bears by logging on to our website, voanews.com. Next Tuesday, October 31st, is Halloween, or All Hallows' Eve. It's a night that is marked by costumes, parties, and trick-or-treating. It is also why many people this time of year are visiting pumpkin patches to pick out just the right gourd to make a jack-o'-lantern. VOA's Debbie Block visited one of those pumpkin farms in Maryland.
The pumpkin theme is everywhere at Butler's Orchard in Germantown, Maryland. It has thousands of pumpkins, including a pumpkin patch where people can pick their own pumpkin. There are also other things to do, like riding a pony, plunging down a slide, or walking around a corn maze with its confusing winding pathways.
Every year, there's always one or two people that will call our farm market, our office, and say they're lost in the corn maze and they can't get out.
A hayride takes visitors to a large pumpkin patch. Some children discover the big orange fruits weigh more than they think.
That was really heavy.
Tristan Piazza plans to carve his pumpkin for Halloween.
I'm going to make the scariest face in the whole neighborhood.
The Butler family owns the 120-hectare farm. Visitors, in season, can pick their own fruits, vegetables, and flowers. Butler's Orchard opened more than 60 years ago as one of the first pick-your-own farms in the area. 89-year-old Shirley Butler and her late husband came up with the idea.
And it's a delight to go out on the farm, which I do a lot, and see beautiful pumpkins in the field. I have people coming out of the field and thanking me for it, so it makes a fun time for everybody.
Ken Merriam brought his children.
I'm a kid at heart.
He says Butler's Orchard brings back good memories of growing up on a farm in Honduras.
It's a little bit of what I used to have as a kid, so that's why I think it's nice to bring them over here, get them out of the city.
Shirley Butler's grandchildren, who are in their 30s, are now the third generation to run the farm. General Manager Tyler Butler says children, who usually only see pumpkins in grocery stores, can learn how pumpkins are grown and tell Tyler.
I didn't know pumpkins came from a vine. There's flowers on this vine. There's roots.
These little girls are learning about pumpkins during their first trip to a pumpkin patch.
To feel, you know, the nature and the fruits.
For Tristan Piazza's mother, the fall festival is an annual event.
My parents have always brought me. I bring my kid now. I hope he stays in the area and he can bring his kids.
Since family farms are hard to keep afloat these days, Tyler Butler appreciates the tens of thousands of visitors who come to the fall festival each year. Deborah Block, VOA News, Germantown, Maryland.
To see video of this story, visit our website, voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. For more, visit our website or leave your questions or comments on our Facebook page. You can find us at VOA American Cafe. Until next time, I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for listening.